Well, hello. Can everybody see me in my new zhuzhi chair that makes me go up? It's the first time I've had the lift. I feel like I'm rising up in the world. Look at that. I feel very important. So we have just had lunch, everybody. We need some big, deep breaths. On my count of three. One, two, three. Inhale. Hold. Release. One, two, three. There you go. Thank you. Don't you just feel connected to this next wonderful, great debate we're going to be having? Now, there's been so much effort gone into this debate. There's been hours of preparation, not. So the good thing here is people with a disability are really good at winging it, and people with a disability are extremely versatile, and they really back each other up and support each other. The concern, obviously, is with a debate is that there's two opposing teams. So we need to keep in mind that perhaps the content, well, we hope it doesn't get personal, that it's going to come from different spectrums and different thought processes. So we need to be just mindful of that. So a debate is a formal way to argue, really. I debate with my husband all the time, because we never argue. I'm not arguing where I'm explaining why I'm correct. So as Wayne mentioned this morning, we're going to hopefully, when we were talking about our leaders in Canberra, we might show how some great debates can be here. So we've sort of, not to take away from the Greens, but we'll have the Greens and the Reds, but then that will come our voting cards later. So you can choose who's whichever later. But, yes, we're going to be doing it very respectfully, aren't we, team? Yes, thank you. Now, the topic is meant to get our blood pumping and our thoughts thumping. But please do take care of yourself as we delve into this very important opportunity to discuss some diversity in views on this topic, for which some may feel a little confronting, as we are here for the arguments for and against. So it's an honour to introduce this debate. Now, this is the question that they'll have in mind. Is the development of our disability pride and identity at risk by placing all the focus on mainstreaming people with disability in society? Big question mark. Hold that thought. Now, I would like to introduce our teams, and I'm just going to be mindful that I would like to describe myself for those who are the vision impaired or who have turned away because they can't bear to look at me, is that I'm an extremely attractive woman, and I have a new chair and I feel very powerful sitting up high. It's quite nice to be at standing height. It's the little things that make a big difference. And no, it wasn't the INDIS who bought the chair. Just in case you were wondering, I'd still be waiting. So I would like to, as I've described myself beautifully and correct, don't tell the others, anybody who can't actually do. Now, Kate, I'm going to have Kate, if she wouldn't mind explaining to us herself in descriptive tone, just a descriptive few words.
Greetings. I'm also beautiful, as you can see. I'm actually studying, and my passion is human rights, no matter what the diversity is. That's what I'm very passionate about, and I'm really feeling privileged that I've been asked to be a part of this debate, professional debate.
Thank you. And John?
Well, I'm an Aboriginal person from country Victoria, which actually we found out most of us are from the country.
Go Victoria.
I believe that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so you can make up your own mind. I want to see lots of green cards, though. I currently work with the NDIS, which puts me on a very interesting path, but I also am a participant too, so I'm sort of fielding this from both sides of the fence. So thank you very kindly for inviting me to be part of this very interesting afternoon.
Thank you. And Caroline?
Hello, I'm Caroline Bowditch, and I am I'm a short, as in properly short, 3'4", white woman in my...
early 20s.
Yeah, early 20s. That would be great, wouldn't it? You're all far enough away to believe that, potentially. And today I am wearing mostly black, but with a... blue blue/purple/indigo cardigan, and I'm wearing very few natural fibres today. I'm mostly dressed in synthetic.
Thank you, Jason.
Cool. Hey, guys, Jason McCurry. Thanks to Daru for having me here today. I'm also from country Victoria, a small country town called Rochester. Moved to Melbourne to study. Passionate for people with disability, I've recently become an advocate. My study was to do with inclusion through sport and how we can use sport as social impact and change.
Awesome. Can we just have a round of applause to give them the extra confidence? Excellent. So, okay, time's ticking away. So what we'll do is I'll just give you an explanation of how this debate is hoped to run, but let's be honest, it probably won't. Each team will have 5 minutes initially to put their for or against statement. Then each team will have 10 minutes of rebuttal. Then each team will have 10 minutes of closing summary. And then, as already has been alluded to, the final choice about the winner of that debate will be chosen by the highly technical, very complex means of the cards. So that's where you are part of the game. So we need to be really listening very carefully. Now, let me introduce the debate. Set the scene. The importance of developing your own identity, particularly of a person with a difference, be it disability, LGBTIQ, gender, can't be underestimated. There is something about being with people just like you that removes a massive weight off your shoulders and allows you to concentrate on being you, rather than concentrating way too hard on trying to fit in and not have the difference interfere in your interactions and relationships with people. Even if you put as many supports in place to make you and your difference fit into society, there will still be that otherness that will forever be the elephant in the room. Supports are very necessary for people with disabilities to get the same quality of education, access to the same jobs, and access to the community in general. But identity development cannot be purchased. So I'll go back to the reminder of our question for the debate. Is the development of our diversity pride and identity at risk by placing all the focus on mainstreaming people with a disability in society? So we will start with the four teams. So that's Kate and John. You have five-ish minutes, and I will give you an indicator, hopefully, if I remember, at 1 minute to go. Go.
First of all, I want to say it's a privilege to be here in this discussion, in this conference. It's an important conversation to be had. I'm a young person, and I think our conversation is important, and my input is. The millennials, you think about words, social media, sometimes you don't understand what we're talking about. So when you look at the Urban Dictionary, I looked at this, and a few things came up. Mainstreaming means it's not cool, okay? So we've actually won this debate. I don't think we even need to talk about it. We don't even need to change it. I think it's time to leave. It's that obvious. But all of us here on the panel have actually brought up from country Victoria, and I've lived in isolation, okay? So on top of that experience, with a disability, I'm limited to lots of options and I'm faced with a lot of barriers. When it's mainstreaming, if you think about the education setting and think about the different types of aspects, family relationships, friends, sport, in the society, not school, not university. Like most of you with people with disabilities, I've grown up as the only deaf person in the family and the only deaf child. One in the community, one at school. So I had that isolating experience and it led to a lot of us feeling very, very isolated. I grew up being deaf, as you know, and that there's been that stigma, but that's the negative view. Because mainstreaming has taught us to fit in society. So we're less than and we're having to fit in with everyone else. So we are left behind and it is a negative stigma. So mainstreaming, as I said, it makes us feel less than. John.
Thank you very kindly. Good strong points there too. Well done. Maya, quickly, if I may, just do an acknowledgement that we are on the lands of the Wurundjeri people today, and I do pay my respects to their elders, both past, present and emerging. So, yeah, what about disability? Our pride, our identity. I think identity is a really strong, powerful word. It's really a key word within this discussion, because independence is what defines us. Though, is it our disability that defines us? Does mainstreaming require us to fit into a mould, a one-size-fits-all? Are we promoting dependency within that model? Are we being underappreciated for our knowledge, our lived experience, our teaching, our role modelling? And are we just taking on being devalued for our uniqueness? Is there an expectation that we are to conform to the larger group, end up becoming, you know, potentially a charity case? As was well articulated before, is mainstreaming forcing society into the acceptance providing the lowest possible standard where individual service encourages higher quality, one-to-one, tailor-made provision? I believe that we are the controllers of our life. We live independent lives, and we have the amazing abilities to do many, many things. And I'm sure if we went around this room and shared some of the stories, we would hear some extraordinary stories. And that's because you are independent. You've broken free of the traditions,
one
of
minute.
The norms, and you've been able to go out and do your own thing. And I've all power for this. And this is what we really encourage. I was encouraged as a child to go out and do my own thing, to experiment, to be able to develop my own personality. And I would encourage all of you to do the same. I think being part of a larger model doesn't really help. So are we being part of the herd, or are we being apart from the herd? Being part supporting is a supportive structure and has role models and advice at our fingertips. But being apart from the herd gives us independence and self-determination. Thank you very much.
Excellent. That's good sportsmanship to clap for the other team. Very, very good. Okay, so for the noes, who would like to lead us? Jason, thank you.
Cool. Despite not agreeing that our disability defines us, I find that disability pride and identity is really important. Having grown up in Rochester, small country town, I actually did not disclose. I was lucky enough that I wasn't discriminated against on a massive basis, but it wasn't until I moved to Melbourne for university and realising all the different cultures and differences of people coming together that it really made me proud of who I am and made me turn into an advocate for someone with a disability. It wasn't too earlier this year I wrote an article which I published online, which was, it was pretty frightening. It was the first time I'd kind of gone live. I'd always talk to my family and close friends about the conditions I struggle with. And going live that article was really eye-opening for me. And it gave me a sense of belonging. I felt like I was myself, and belonging to a group of people was really important for me, to that group of people that I wanted to belong to. So it wasn't trying to fit in with someone else. It was actually the group I was passionate about, and being here today has been amazing as well. I think since then, collaborating with the group and that sense of identity is so important. And we talk about non-disclosure, Caroline and I was talking about, and yeah, there is some, I guess, some doubt in disclosing and whatnot, but I think together as a group, it's really important that we come together, we celebrate. If you think about mainstreaming, there's a long way to go, and it's never going to be a perfect, we were talking before, it's never going to be a perfect scenario, but it's important to talk in our groups, to share our wins, our small wins, our big wins, our struggles, our challenges, and how we overcome them. And just one more point I'll make is about informal leadership and role models within the community. Having all been from country towns, it just worked out that way. It was quite a coincidence. I think having informal role models within the community who identify as having a disability is really important for young people with a disability. It was mentioned earlier today, and I think that's a massive point, because having someone to look up to know what's out there and what the potential can hold for that young person is massive. And I think having people in more mainstream environments will help that. But I think we also need our groups to collaborate and continue talking.
Fantastic. So I have just returned to Australia after 16 years of living in the UK. And so I've been thriving and living in a very different environment to what I've come back to. I've been living in a world where the social model is the way that the world functions. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the social model, it absolutely acknowledges that we are more disabled by the world that we live in and the environments that are built around us and the structures that we have to work within than we necessarily are by our bodies. It's moulded my language, the way that I speak, and also the way that I think about myself. So I have come back with an incredible disability pride and a pride in myself, and have now taken on this role, this leadership role, a really important leadership role, as Executive Director at Arts Access Victoria. This is the first time that a disabled person has led that organisation in its 40-year history, so it's kind of something to be absolutely celebrated. But one of the things that I'm most passionate about is that the only way that we are actually going to change is to be part of the mainstream, is to become trip hazards, is to become those things that can't be ignored, is to become expected in the places that we aren't usually expected, to be sat at those boardroom tables, to be in those conversations, to not be thought of as an anthropological group that can be studied or can be serviced, but actually becomes the leader within those mainstream organisations, to be present, to be very, very present, to have our stories told on stages, in films, and for it to become, well, I hate the word, but this thought of normalising disability, I think, is the way that we absolutely have to go.
Thank you. Outstanding. Okay, so that's 10 minutes of pretty amazing statements. So we will now move to the yes, to the four team, and you have 10 minutes to rebut to their argument if you think that you can. Thank you.
Thank you very, very kindly. If I may, this time, if I may start up with some comments. Firstly, too, thank you for our other team. It's good to be able to have someone to be able to challenge and present an opposing view. I suppose when I was a child, I grew up actually in a disabled family. I actually had a very extraordinary upbringing. We had an amazing foster mother who worked at the Royal Children's Hospital, and she looked after probably almost a dozen children with disability over the course of my raising. And this is the one thing that we were very, very strong about, was not being a part of the system, to be able to break free of that. It's funny, prior to the debate starting, we were talking about Volkswagen copy vans, of all things, and it brought back a childhood memory of owning a copy van, and how, you know, this is before the era of electronic and hoist and what have we, and we used to have put a false floor on the vehicle and have a long a wooden ramp that would slide underneath between the floor and the vehicle. We used to slide that out, and that became the ramp. We were able to push wheelchairs into this vehicle. We were able to go on way on holidays. You know, I remember some of the amazing holidays we went down to interstate and what have we. And it really taught me independence. And sometimes within that independence, it does help to be able to find out where your own strengths and weaknesses are. You know, a good friend of mine said, you know, it's not how many times you fall down, it's how many times you get back up again that really does count. And I think I've got to be very careful if, especially within my work scenario, working within the mainstream structure, because I don't want to be perceived as who I am by mainstream, because often their perception of who I am differs vastly from who I see myself from being. And that is really different. And especially as I was growing up, you know, persons with disability were viewed as oddities, were viewed very differently. And, you know, thankfully we are on a journey now when we are moving away from that model of what the rest of the world, the rest of society perceive us of what we can't do, and strong, powerful individuals like the people in this room today now have been able to prove to that society, to that mainstream, is that, yes, we can. And I think that is a really, really important lesson. And I suppose, too, we've got to say, right, where do we stand within this? And I hope, you know, my legacy, our legacy, you know, and I think for each and every one of us, including our delightful opponents, though they're really not opponents, they're colleagues within this field as well, that that the legacy that we all leave is encouragement and role modelling to others. And I've got to be really careful that I do that. I could do that within the freedom and with the common sense, I suppose, that what I'm doing is feels right for me, even though it might not be the same view that other people give. Because sometimes when you're stuck in a mainstream system, you're carried along down the river with everybody else, slowly gathering speed, and you could end up in a space where it doesn't suit you, it doesn't fit your particular needs. And sometimes we've got to break through of that mould and say, no, because I am an individual, because I have a personality, I have an identity, then I need to be able to exercise that freely. And so that's, I suppose, my thoughts in relation to mainstreaming. It's good, it's there, we can get a lot of support from it and get a lot of advice from it as well. However, we've got to realise that it is a tool amongst other tools that we could use, and I would suggest trying to slowly break free of that and exercise self-dependence. Is something that, well, I feel very comfortable in doing, and I hope that you feel very comfortable in doing as well.
I fully agree, of course. Now, this notion of the disability model, the focus is a medical model. And as a deaf child, I was diagnosed, I was given hearing aids, cochlear implants, and that was the ability to fit in with the mainstream community. So having to fit in with society's ways, always having to fit in, but nothing around in the society fit with me. But unfortunately, the word disability can be a sensitive topic. And I feel like we can achieve anything. I agree with that. Up until last year, I didn't identify as having a disability. I just felt that I was stigmatised. I was given that label because I've always felt that I can do anything. And I've met many people like you here today. The issue that I understand it, it's not disability, it's society and how they perceive people with disability. At the moment, the education curriculum looks at how people with disabilities can fit in with their various ways. You know, there are different ways that can be given. We can achieve so much. We have the same goal, but there may be a different pathway to achieve that goal. Mainstreaming, the focus on that is how people with disabilities can fit in. And what we have to do is make sure that they are involved in any processes. Mainstreaming, as you know, it's very diverse. So if you have companies and boards, and if you're looking at the quota, I don't want to be a number, okay? So I don't want to be one of those people that where they tick a box. Okay, we've got diversity in the workplace. I want to be recruited and I want to be thought of. Okay, there's some issues here. How can we work around this so that I can be involved in the workplace? So I want to be seen in a positive light. Disability means we have to miss things so that we can be equal or on par. No. It's getting supports for services, technology. It focuses on the medical model, how we can seamlessly get involved. Technology, as you know, is very discreet. It's hidden. And so you can be normalised, I guess. So we need to be proud of our differences, be included in education, and everyone be included. And, you know, there's having people with disabilities is a huge benefit. And you have to empower and educate everyone. If you teach children that they can just be creative and they ask why is this, why is that, why am I not a part of this? We need to be a part of discussions. Because in the discussion, if that's taken away and we're hidden in this mainstream idea, then what's possible for us? As a deaf individual, I've been taught to lip read and I've had to work hard to fit in. But I've got to a point, I can't hear, and that's okay. You know, that's reality. But I can still get involved in conversations, but in a different light. There are different paths. I'm proud. I'm proud of my disability, and I know that I can, on par with anyone else, do whatever you do. We can come together, sit together, you know? So we need to welcome and involve and value our opinion. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, so to the noes, you have 10 minutes of rebuttal.
Okay, despite this being a debate, Kate, I'd just like to say, well summarised, I tend to agree with a lot of that, and it leads me to my next point.
Okay,
I think it's
more.
Really important to celebrate our uniqueness, our differences and our quirks. We need to stick together and celebrate that, and I think it's young people. I'd just like to give a shout-out to Bryce and Kate for being here today. Young people sticking up for what they believe in, so that's awesome. It needs more of us people proud of who we are, in the mainstream, and I would just like to take it back to Carolyn's point. The current status quo is like a quota, or it's like we need to have individualised sessions and stuff like that. I think we need to shift the status quo. People with disability, ourselves, we need to be free and free to answer questions in the general public, in the mainstream, and until we do that, the stigma's not going to shift. So Carolyn, being in a CEO position or executive director position, she's seen as an inspiration and a role model, not for just people with disability, but for everyone. And I think that's really important. And it's going to take people being proud of their disability and in positions like that in the mainstream to shift the current status. I wanted to touch on Anne from Melbourne Uni's research earlier today around community attitudes. I feel that some people are scared to ask. They've always wanted to ask, don't want to offend, that kind of thing. And it's all about education. I think that shift... that shift to the mainstream is really around education of society. I think after I posted that article, I'm still getting follow-ups like a year on, like, oh, I had a question about this, or how do I go about asking this, or what's a politically correct term for this and stuff like that. They might not know what language to use. And I think a lot of people are keen to embrace disabilities, but they're not know the proper way to do it. And I think by people like us being in the mainstream, it's really important, but being proud of our identities and wanting to have that conversation.
Thank you.
So, thanks.
You've got... just so you know, Carolyn, you've got 7 whole minutes.
Way! Are you sad about that?
Sorry, guys.
Okay, so... that's my mic pack, but can you still hear me?
Yep.
Great. I'm really loud anyway, so it wouldn't matter whether I had a microphone or not. There's a few things I want to pick up on from both sides. One is that I think that we need to be talking more about intersectionality in this country, about we are more than just one identity. So I am a woman, I am a disabled woman, I am... LGBTI woman in that community, I am more than just one identity. So I think we need to, when we think about disability, we often think, oh, there's a disability. But we often forget all the other identities that come with that. And I think we need to start to open up those conversations. And I'm really keen to also start to think about how do we intersect with those other groups and how can we be working together and strengthening the voice. Across the board. I had two stories that I wanted to tell you. One was about, very much about my lack of pride as a young disabled Australian woman. When I was 30, I went to see the exhibition of Frida Kahlo. So Frida Kahlo is possibly one of the best known Mexican painters in the world. And for many people, they don't know that Frida had lived with disability for her whole life. She was born with spina bifida, she developed polio when she was six, and then she was involved in a tragic and terrible bus tram accident when she was 18. So she lived with disability, and it was explicit in all of her work that she put on the walls. I went to the National Gallery of Australia in Canberra and saw her work when I was 30. And none of that. I did not recognise disability in any of her work because a part of me thought, "How she can't be a disabled artist. How would she ever be that successful?" There is something very wrong about that. That as a 30-year-old woman, I never ever thought that the work of a disabled artist would warrant being in the National Gallery of Australia. I then went on to make a piece called Falling in Love with Frida to reclaim her as a disabled artist, and that piece has travelled all over the world. So that's one story. The other story is that I wanted to tell this thing about the importance of being able to be a collective but also be in the mainstream. So I'm wedged. There is a part of me that's quite uncomfortable because I'm a bit fence-sitting right now. But I remember being in America and going to the Little People of America conference. That's what they choose. That's the language in America, is Little People of America. I remember sitting at the door of this down, very fancy downtown Los Angeles hotel and staring in the door, and all I could see was a sea of short people. At that point, I made a very important realization. The second that I set foot into that building, I was no longer going to be special. I was going to become very average. And I realized that that was the first time in my life, I was 26, that I was ever going to have the experience of what it was to be part of the norm, to be just average. There's something very wrong about that. And it makes me desperate to work with young disabled people in this country now to increase their disability pride, to make them confident in who they are as people, in all of their identities, wherever they are, and to really embed that and to create and fire them in terms of wanting to be the leaders. So all of this is about I don't want to just be involved in the conversation. We need to be leading those conversations. And my question to all of you, anyone who works in a disability service or anyone who has aspirations for disabled people to succeed in the world, how are you making space for that to happen? Because it's not. If you continue to stay in those places, you need to be creating space for people to be able to come through and into those positions of power, of control, of leading things. That's my question. How are you creating that space? And also, more importantly, how, once they're there, are you holding space for that person? I came into this role because Veronica Pardo, who was the previous executive director at Arts Access Victoria, made a very brave move that lots of people thought was wrong, in that she said, we need to be working with authentic leadership. And that means a disability arts organisation needs to be led by a disabled person. So she stepped aside. She created space for me to come in. And she remains holding that space and supporting me in order for me to be able to succeed in this role. How are you holding space? How are you making space? And also for all of us, how are we taking space? Because that's the other really important thing. We as disabled people need to take that space and know that we belong there.
Well done. Thank you. Okay, well, I just find that as this conversation's going on, I think it's probably the first conversation I've ever heard of this sort, so I think this is really exciting. Well done. Now we'll move into the closing summary. So keep in mind, you've got some people out there and you want the card to show you green. So bring it home. So you've got 10 minutes and we'll start with the yes for the four. So you've got 10 minutes. What I will do is I will let you know when there's 5 minutes, so then you've got some idea of who's got the next little bit left. And if you want to finish early, whoever goes first, then that just leaves the next person to take up that time. If not, whatever you do is fine. So over to you for 10 minutes, the yes team.
Thank you very kindly, and thank you too for these very inspiring comments and sharings that we've been had today. I think, you know, regardless of yes or no, I think I hope the one thing that we're all able to take away from today is the inspiration and the strength that many persons with disability have been able to not only tell and share about, but also live their life. And thank you for that story too about the disabled artist as well. That was truly incredible. It really was. It's interesting, I work within the field of disability. I work for an organisation called the Brothers St Lawrence, the NDIS. And depending on who you are and where you come from and what your situation is, NDIS can be a very positive story for people, or it can be a very negative story for people. And I think, well, okay, firstly, the premise of the NDIS is that we've got a one huge program that is supposed to then work for approximately 500,000 people throughout Australia with individual needs who have a disability. And this is right from the age of 0 up to 65. Now, that might look very good on paper, but in the world of reality, trying to deliver that is a truly extraordinary feat. Now, I mentioned before that I am an Aboriginal person, and often within these chats, I tend to lean over into the Aboriginal side of things as well, because I could see real parallels within the challenges that face Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and the challenges that face persons with disability as well. It's interesting. I was at in-house staff training session on what's today? Still Friday? I think it was Monday. I think it was Monday, and it was on the LGBTI community. Have I got that right? That deserves a green card to start with. Jeez, I've been working hard at that all week. And it was just fascinating. There was a presenter there, a person with disability, who would probably be conservatively, maybe in their 30s, living in a nursing home. And this is because they can't find a facility to help support that particular individual. And I think what you were saying was just so true as well. We are not looking at this just with one aspect of our lives. We're looking at it through many different lenses. And how do we cope with that? How do we understand that? And how do we then be able to move that continuously forward at some kind of a reasonable pace to say, yes, I am comfortable, I am happy within myself, I have an understanding of who I am as a human being. Because if I don't know who I am, it is really difficult then to be able to articulate that to other people, and so therefore sharing what my needs are. Because if I don't know what my needs are, and of course they are continuously changing due to a variety of different reasons, including my age, for example. And so we are not working off a even playing field. And there are most certainly real strengths in working with numbers. But you realise that we are a minority group. And the mainstream out there, from my experiences working with the NDIS up to date, and I've been there for nearly 2 years now, is that mainstream have little to no understanding, I think, personally, really, of what disability is about. And probably one of the, if I can use a quick travel example for that, you can tell if you go to a country town and you come to a hotel or a motel and you think, wow, this is really well equipped. It actually has the grab rails and the price of the doors, the beds in the right place, so you're not continuously moving the furniture around or putting it outside the hotel so you can access the bathroom or the whatever. And, of course, then you talk to the owners of the hotel and you realise they have somebody within their family who has disability. And I think this is part of the role that we need to play. We need to be out there in the community, button heads with people, you know, throwing our wheelchairs up against the glass doors and saying, let me in. Because if we are too reserved, if we are too, oh, you know, I don't want to cause a fuss, I don't want to piss anybody off,
Five minutes.
Then we are not going to instill change. And I think part of my legacy, I was saying before, is maybe, maybe not within my lifetime, being able to see that change occur. And it has been a real journey, and it is, you know, a powerful thing to see that, yes, we do have accessible buses and taxis and lifts and ramps and what have we, but we still have a long way to go. And so if it is not for this generation, it is for the following generations. And so that is the legacy that you can leave for others as well. Now, we may not get a square on Hollywood fame. We might not get a park bench with our name written on it or a street, you know, this was John Street or something like that. A statue, there we go, a statue. But, you know, I think we can then rest easy at night to saying, and especially for our young people as well, those who are really struggling to be able to get through, to get by in this ever-changing world, that we have helped the community move forward and the mainstream have a better understanding of what is disability, how it impacts us, our family, our friends, our community, and the fact that, yes, we do want to be a part of it. We don't want to sit there and watch it happen. We want to be there and make it happen. Thank you.
Thanks, John. I can see the positive and negatives of mainstreaming. But for disability, I think it's important that we network with each other and share different experiences. And when you get involved in mainstream, you know, the best of both worlds, so you have positive and negatives that occur. But with mainstreaming, how does it affect us? How does mainstream actually roll out into society? How does it work? Mainstreaming, does it mean that the person is isolated and they represent their own disability? It means various things, but it's normalising, you know, that the community is so diverse. But unfortunately, the issue at the moment that we have mainstreaming, it means people with disabilities have to try and get involved. And so there's not that sharing of that world, that experience. It's not our world, it's not their world and where we're trying to fit in. We are all part of this world. We have a right to access. And they have a right to access us so we can converse. Sometimes it's not clear. Sometimes we don't have a clear understanding of each other. It hurts. Sometimes we have to work hard to be able to communicate. And it's frustrating. It's annoying. So people, you know, advocate to a point where they've had enough. So mainstreaming, I think, it has to conform to benefit us, but also mainstream as well. If they understand, and if we understand, and we understand each other, like it was mentioned before, if they don't understand, how can they help us? How do they communicate with us? Mainstreaming, it's about each other, where we facilitate, where we communicate, where we both come together. It's not their world. It's not us having to mainstream into their world. Together, you can be proud of our differences. But together, that's where we develop pride and understanding and we can communicate. That's what I believe and that's where it's seamless.
Well done. Okay, so no pressure. As you bring it home for the next 10 minutes, and again, I will go five when there's left if someone, whoever wants to go first. So we'd like to hear your closing summary, please, for the no.
Thanks, Colleen. I'd just like to follow up again on what Carolyn said about the taking space and the leaving space, and similar to John's legacy and what legacy we as advocates for people with disability can have. And I think the big one that I guess was summarised in the yes and no was the how long it took us to disclose or identify as someone as having a disability. So Kate, what was it last year, or me earlier this year, yourself when you're 30, that kind of thing. So I think that's really important. It'd be great to catch up with you guys after and have a chat about how long it took you to embrace that and celebrate that. But I think that's something, can we change that and make sure our children and youth and primary school age people are proud of who they are, talk about it early? Because I think if that's the whole point of the mainstream. I think the earlier it gets talked about, if it's in primary school sectors, that kind of thing, rather than making, yeah, like, push them to the side and stuff like that, if we celebrate that and talk early, I think that's where the mainstream education is going to change and that stigma is going to change. And I think it's like a little example from me. I run sport programs for RMIT University, and since I've kind of embraced the fact, I was setting up the equipment one day and a couple of students arrived early, and my tics get worse when I'm quite stressed. So what happened was I was ticking quite bad. I was head nodding. Someone's like, "What are you doing, mate? You all right? Are you having a fit?" One of the students. And I said, "Oh, you've never seen someone with Tourette's." And he was kind of like shocked at the start. And then we just started having a conversation, and it was just really educational. He was like, "Oh, what can I find out more?" and that kind of thing. So I think easy ones like that, by you don't necessarily have to exclude yourself as having a disability, but being proud of who you are and having that chat. And I guess the key ones for me are, we've all got differences and quirks. Like you said, it doesn't matter how we identify, if it's disability, Indigenous, LGBTI, however we identify, those differences are awesome. That's what makes us awesome people, and I think it's really important to shape how we celebrate that. Yeah, I'll hand it over to Carolyn.
No worries. 4.5 minutes.
I want to tell you about escaping the special school system. So I went to special school. I grew up in a tiny country town for the first 5 years, and then my mum decided that the best thing for me was to move to Melbourne. So I went to a school called Marathon, which some of you might remember, and that then became Glen Waverley Special School and is now called something else. Glen Allen, it's called now, I think. I was like, I recognise that face. I was in year seven, and I was integrated from eight into a mainstream primary school, which was horrendous, and it was a terrible, terrible process that was handled incredibly badly on all sides. And I remember my first year, so I was in year seven at high school, and it was the year seven camp, and I decided that I was going to go with my integration aid, as they were called in those days. I don't know what they're called now, something else fancy probably. And my integration aid and I went on camp, and one of the activities that we were doing was we went canoeing. Yeah. It was the first time in my life that I actually thought, no one can go any faster than me. We are literally in the same boat. And that was the first time I sensed equality. When I got back from that camp, our year seven coordinator got in touch with my mum and said, Caroline does not need to be integrated. She needs to be with us all the time. This going backwards and forwards is being completely detrimental to her education, and she just needs to be with us. Trying to extract me from the special school system in order to allow that to happen was a real struggle for my mum. And it shouldn't have been, but it was. A couple of years ago, I went to teach a dance session in a special school in Glasgow where I was living. I went in, I was preparing the room, it was all great, and this little boy came in and looked at me and just went, "Are you our teacher?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he ran out into the corridor and just went, "Guys, guess what? She's one of us!" That is wrong. That is wrong that that child had never ever been taught by a disabled person in his life. I taught a 15-year-old girl, and her first questions to me, because I was the first disabled adult that she'd met, was, will I get married? Can I have babies? Will anyone ever fall in love with me? That is wrong. That cannot happen. So disabled children need to be hanging out with disabled adults as well as everybody else. Disabled kids need to be seeing disabled adults in roles of leadership, in public figures, around everywhere. We just need to be everywhere and visible. We are a minority, as John said, but we make up 20% of the population. The challenge is that only about 10% of that 20% have a visible disability. The rest is invisible. So we live with disability all the time, but we just don't acknowledge it. We don't disclose because we don't feel confident in doing that. We need to shift that. We need to shift that so that everybody feels valued and valuable and has the opportunity to step up when it feels right for them.
Awesome. Well, I don't know about you, but that was very insightful. Let's do the vote, and then I'll just have a few words to close. So raise your cards. Ooh. Oh. There's a posse down there of redness. There's another posse over there of greenness. Right. And we've... Oh. Well... I'm going to make the call that I actually think it's a draw. Yep. Because I value my life, and I thought, well, we've done our bit now. It really doesn't matter. That was all just fun. So I just wanted to just run past some of the messages that really quickly. So disability pride, diversity. How are you holding your space? How are you taking your space? Identity, disclosure, invisible disability, strength, disabled kids needing to see disabled figures in leadership everywhere. Does this mean that we're not as special as we might think? Are we one community? Is it okay to choose your space and place in that community? Two quotes to leave. It is better to debate a question without settling it than to settle a question without debating it. It's not about what you say, it's about how you say it. It's not about what comes out of your mouth, it's about the reason behind your word. So thank you once again.